Welcome back on to the David L. Gray Show, voicing truth and reason. Happy to have you back. I've been gone. If you're trying to find me, I was gone last week. YouTube suspended me again. This time it was over a video. So I was gone for 2 weeks this time, actually. So it was over a video that I had in the membership only section, and I had made it public just to make a point. So the video was about Brandon, that story that Tucker had covered. You know, I have him in a clip. And so the video was about Brandon, was actually about Brandon's daughter, her diary, in which Brandon, you know, she says Brandon did some strange things to her in the shower. So YouTube called that video election interference. And so they said, bye-bye, Mr. Gray, you're gone for a couple of weeks. So it was cool anyway. I was in Lourdes, France. I had a great time in Lourdes. I'm going to do a bad vlog on that pretty soon, so you check it out. So anyway, but if you were a member of my Patreon club, you still would have saw the videos that I uploaded. I did a really good video with John Salza. It was the first time him and I did a video, which is really cool. You know, I had spent 10 years in Freemasonry on a national level, in research societies, doing a lot of work around the world on Freemasonry, about its history. Every English-speaking country, if you're a researcher, Masonic researcher in an English-speaking country, you knew who David L. Gray was. That's how prolific my work was. And John, he had was notable in his own right in the state of, I think, Wisconsin or Minnesota, I believe. So prolific writer on, you know, he had wrote two books on Freemasonry from a Catholic perspective. I had written the Catholic Catechism on Freemasonry. So it was a blast, us comparing notes of our time when we were Freemasons and also just tossing around the subject itself as Catholics now. Well, him as a revert, me as a new Catholic from 2006, talking about things we found, you know, him in his reversion and my conversion to the faith. And how Catholics, what they thought about Freemasonry. We talked about how the Knights of Columbus are just infiltrated. The Knights of Columbus just infiltrated with Freemasons. And I'm going to do another video on that next week. And it's really going to sicken you how common it is to be a Knight of Columbus and a Freemason. So we're going to kick that around. But back to the point that I was trying to make, that if you were a member of my Patreon club, you would have, you know, saw those videos. I did one with him, and I did one with Joshua Charles. He had him and Tan. They had reprinted a book by senior George Dillon, a book that I really never liked, but I kind of like better now since Tan redid it, because Joshua did an amazing job with the footnotes. It's so accessible. So I had a good talk with him. So I'll make that video public on YouTube and Rumble and Odyssey tomorrow. So yeah, so hop over to... drop down the description box, hop over to my Patreon club. If you like the benefits, if you want to tell all your friends that you support David L. Gray, just become a supporter. Nobody cares, right? Except for me. I would really like for you to do that. Somebody has bad bills around here. Anyway, let's get into the show, man. I got an amazing guest on today. It is no other than the Kennedy Hall from the Kennedy Report. So let's get him into the show. And this is live. We're live streaming on the Facebook, YouTube, and the Twitter. And so let's get into the show now.
Hovering over the skies of a post-Christian society, we have spotted a man with a donut in one hand and rosary beads in another.
Child, I'm about to whoop Satan's behind.
He is boldly proclaiming truth and reason like no rigid Catholic ever has before. The David L. Gray Show begins now.
Mr. Kennedy Hall is a Catholic author, podcaster, and he writes prolifically. He has his own books, one that he published recently that we're going to kick around today. He writes essays over at 1 Peter 5, Crisis Magazine, LifeSite News, Catholic Family News. He's also doing voiceover narrations, so he's doing that quite professionally now. He has, you know, obviously a wonderful voice. His wife probably likes to hear it all the time. So, but now he's on the David L. Gray Show. Welcome in, Kennedy Hall.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is wonderful.
Yeah, man. Pleasure to have you in. So one of the main reasons I wanted to have you over is because you know how you go to the YouTube dashboard and you can look at your analytics and you can see who the type of people who watch your show, right? Their demographics, but also tells you what other channels they watch, right? And so a lot of my audience, I think you're like number six, you know, it has the ranking. I think for some reason, most of my audience, I think it goes Taylor Marshall. No, it goes Matt Frad. Well, yeah, that's what I think is weird. It goes Matt Frad, which I don't see the crossover. But so Matt Frad and then Taylor Marshall, you know, down. Michael Lofton used to be on there. I didn't understand that crossover. And so I think after I did a video, I defended you one time in a video.
Oh, yes. Thank you for that, sir.
About, you know, the whole thing. And so yeah. I lost a lot of his people. So I think he dropped off. but now I think you're number six. So who's your audience? Like, what do we have in common?
A lot of it is Marshall. Well, the SSPX does have a channel. So I talk about that a lot. So there's a lot of crossover there. Return to Tradition, Anthony Stein, Catholic Family News, sort of, you know, the motley crew of traditionally leaning folks. And then, you know, there are a lot of, let's say, like channels like Catholic Answers are, let's call them just sort of meat and potatoes, middle of the road Catholic information. So there's a lot of people from all sides of the spectrum kind of tune into them. So I'm sure it's on there as well.
Yeah. That's good stuff, man. And so that's one reason I'm really happy to have you on, because I know a lot of my audience, you know, loves you and appreciate the work that you do, that you're doing. How did you kind of get into the work of, you know, the Kennedy Report and all this that you're doing? Because from what I understand, I honestly on YouTube, it's rare when I watch a whole video, but I tend to watch. The thing about you, Kennedy, is that you have great titles to your videos. You do.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
And yeah, I mean, they're awesome. They make you want to click on them. But what's awesome about your titles is that they're not clickbait. You actually talk about what's in your videos. There's another guy who I think is determined to be Catholic, Decrevy or something like that. His titles are like out of the world. But I click on his videos and like, dude, you're not even really talking about that. And I might have him on a show one time just to ask him, like, why, you know, what's up with the like the catfish titles, man? What's up with that? But what got you into the whole work of the Kennedy Report?
So I was a Catholic high school teacher, in the Catholic system here in Ontario, which is technically Catholic, although sadly very poor in its formation of students and so forth. Anyway, I was a teacher in that system, and I wanted to get into writing and stuff. Lockdown hits in 2020. I wasn't about it. I sort of had been red-pilled on that whole thing pretty early on. And I knew I just couldn't stay in the system for reasons of theological problems, and also just the way that the students were, you know, lockdown lasted for like 2.5 years here in Ontario, so it was pretty rough. Yeah. And so I fell into a job at the Fatima Center, which I was with for a year, and they asked me, would you like to do a show called The Kennedy Report? And I said, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
And it was just sort of a contract thing. Like, you can do a show once a week. And we had, there was like a green screen in the studio, and it was great. And then I just sort of moved on from there. Just, it was sort of a part-time temporary thing. And then I wanted to keep doing YouTube. So just kept doing it. And Kennedy's my name. So I'm still reporting. So it's the Kennedy Report. And then when I transitioned to being sort of more of an independent, person, like I still work for LifeSite News, but sort of trying to build this other thing, you know, in this world, we got to have side gigs and stuff. Inflation is crazy. Taxes are high in Ontario here. So yeah. I just decided to do it. And it's just become a thing that's sort of a sustainable part of my life now.
I know somebody on Twitter the other day, they were like, I don't know if you read subtweets or, you know, people tweeting back at you, but they're kind of like, I don't know what you're even saying, but somebody's like, Kennedy, mind your business, talk about Canada, what's going on in Canada. How do you feel about people wanting you to like just shut up and dribble, right? I mean
people, it's just haters are everywhere, man. Like, you know, I mean, I write about politics in international politics all the time. I've been doing it for a long time. And, you know, growing up in Canada, I mean, it's a very different country. You know, I was just in St. Mary's, Kansas for the consecration of the Immaculata down there. And I love America. Like, I really do. You know, if tomorrow it got so bad in Canada that we'd have to be refugees and escape or whatever, I'd obviously really miss my homeland, but it'd be real easy to find a nice place to live in the United States. It's a beautiful place. It's wonderful people. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. But it is a very different place. And when we grow up in Canada, but though we do understand a lot about American politics, just because historically Canadian politics have been pleasantly boring, which was a good thing because nothing insane was happening. Whereas American politics have always been like, you know,
okay.
One vote away from the end of civilization is always the narrative, right? So I, you know, we get it. So I know a lot about, I mean, you just know a lot about American culture. So I write about what I know and I don't write about what I don't know. So some people just think, I don't know, because of my, I spell color with a U, perhaps I shouldn't talk about the United States, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. That's good stuff, man. Toronto's like one of my, you know, when I was in high school, no, college rather, my friends and I, we would always come up to the Caravana Festival.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
We were heathens.
Yeah.
Toronto had all the pretty girls. You know, it was that type of thing. But later on in life though, I fell in love with Montreal, right? It looked very Catholic.
Yeah.
This is after I became a Catholic. All the street signs are Catholic, the Cathedral Notre Dame is just beautiful. Just one of the most beautiful cities. Not Catholic at all, though, right? What's up with that?
Well, yeah, I mean, the expression, the corruption of the best is the worst. Montreal, Quebec was the best, and now it's the worst, you know? You know, like there's a street called Saint-Catherine, you know, Saint Catherine, mm-hmm. and named after Saint Catherine of Siena, I'm pretty sure. Or of Alexandria, I can't remember which. Anyway, named after a pretty big deal, Saint Catherine, and now it's the home for all the strip clubs in Montreal, which it's now internationally famous for.
Wow.
So you know, but literally, you go to everywhere, you know, in Quebec, and every street is Saint something. You know, Laval University is an amazing. It's the best football program in Canada. They win the national title almost every year. They're really good. Laval is named after the first bishop of Quebec, but it's a massively anti-Catholic liberal institution now. It's just how it goes.
Shout out to the Crevy. Is that how you pronounce it? Trying to be Catholic. It's funny. I was just talking about you. That's why you don't talk about people behind their back, because they'll just hop onto your YouTube stream and like, but I stand by what I say, dude. Your subtitles, I think they're, you know, they're really good. They get me to click. I just, you know, whatever. We could talk about that. But yeah, thanks for chiming in. Awesome. Hey, so I was watching, like I said, I was watching one of your videos, and you had Franny.
Charles Franny. Franny. He says it's Franny. That's what he says.
And he had a new book. A lot of Catholics may know him from Slaying the Dragon. He heavily promoted it. Did very well as a self-published book, I think. He was everywhere promoting a book, so I think he did really well just doing that as an independent publisher. Congratulations. Yep. Wrote a new book, Rise of the Occult, and caught the title and clicked on it and listened to quite a bit of it, obviously, because I got to a 30-minute mark or so. When you said this, and I want to...
Sure.
A little bit about this. Let me play the clip.
In your research, see, I've always wondered, because Freemasonry is so secretive, it makes, I'm gonna use a term here, a deep fake. It makes a deep fake so easy. And what I mean by that is, there are definitely people who have left Freemasonry, but then when I look at the claims of people who have left Freemasonry, and they describe Freemasonry, sometimes they actually really contradict one another. Is it possible? I mean, could you maybe an educated guess from your research? Do you think there are people who are alleged former Freemasons, but are still active, and they sort of maybe sow discord in the church by spreading misinformation? I mean, is that something that you've ever come across or crossed your mind?
I haven't come across that specifically, but if that is actually happening, they would hide themselves pretty well. I mean, if you think about Bella Dodd and the claims there about communists infiltrating the church, which I know some of those claims are disputed, but if you look at the evidence, it seems clear.
Yeah, so unpack that, Kennedy. What did you mean by the question you're asking, Charles?
Yeah, it's just... I was thinking of like double agents, like, I don't know, like if like secretive society, is there a thing like, did you ever find in your history, like, you know, I know there are definitely secret Freemasons who have been clerics and stuff. You did a wonderful show about some of the popes who were probably made Freemasons as youngsters, which I thought was extremely fascinating. That was a really good show. But I just wondered, like, you know, I mean, if I'm like a KGB agent, you know, it'd be a great gig to sort of come out as a former KGB agent and tell everyone about the Soviet Union and it's wrong as a distraction. Has it ever been a thing where some lodges do like a psyop or something? I just find that fascinating.
That sounds like a great book. I mean, you're saying that.
that's a great story for like a spy novel or a thriller or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So, I mean, but when you consider like, at least people like, and we don't have to talk about other critiques, you know, that like Salza got into, but just on this issue itself, like, is there like a suspicion? Here's why I say this, because this came up in an interview when I did with Salza, that no matter what, if him or I break from some of the traditional group things, some things that is traditional, even conservatives, that we should always hold to like sacraments. And I don't say that pejoratively. I just think in every culture that there's some things that hold the culture together. These are our beliefs. These are our values. And when you break from that, as a person who, you know, usually is classified as a Black American, there's a assumption that when I was trying to be culturally Black, that when I would break from, you know, a woman who I thought I was going to get serious with, like we were going to go down that road, when I told her that I would never vote for Obama, you know, she kind of broke out with me, right? Because I broke from the sacrament, right? So there's just some things as a Black American that if you break from, you called Uncle Tom a coon. So I think it's the same with us traditionalists or traditional-minded folks when we break from certain things that, you know, we get viewed with suspicion. And I think there's more suspicion when you have like a shady history. Whether you're a former Freemason or you're somebody like Abby Johnson, I think a lot of people like Abby Johnson, what she has to say. But a lot of people just won't let them, you know, let her watch her kids, right? They just think her background with Planned Parenthood is kind of like, Paul, St. Paul may have gotten that same thing. Like, Paul, you're doing great work, man. You killed my cousin, you know, like, kind of like, the, you know, like if you're a Mexican, right. Hey, homie, you know, what's it? Oh, hey, Holmes, you killed my brother, man. I like what you're doing. You know, that's kind of racist, right? But, you know, but it's kind of thing. Do you think, is it fair? I mean, is that a thing? Do you think that some people, particularly former Freemasons, you think when, like, is that legit that people may always consider us maybe not on the up and up? Is that always that stigmata hanging around us?
I was just thinking more. It was actually just hypothetical. Like, is this something that's been like a strategy, like in the church? You know what I mean? It was more like, it was just spitballing, you know, I think I talked to Charles for like an hour and a half about all these occulty things. There's lots of ideas going around. I just thought, wouldn't that be a really devious thing if some group was to try to do that? So I was just wondering if it had ever happened. That's all.
So more like the like you were saying, like the communist infiltration type of thing, or like the just Carbonari,
like
a psyop,
you know, like I mean, you know, like the feds, you know, like the
type of thing,
right? Like they'll send like an agent to like I mean, really, with the traditional parishes, they'll send somebody to you know, that pose as somebody else. I was just wondering if that had ever happened, because it would seem pretty devious. Is all. It was fascinating.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I'm sure maybe there probably had been a time as well. I wouldn't doubt it at all. So, yeah. But what's your, because I know at times you've done some really good work on the topic itself, on Freemasonry, as a person who, you had never been initiated, had you?
No.
No. So I tend to be critical of people who, you know, is that there's always something to say about Catholics who write about Catholicism do a much better job than Protestants, right? So, right. But I think you do a fairly good job when you talk about the subject of Freemasonry. Recently, you were talking about the Anglicans who had done a mass over in the Vatican. They had desecrated the altar, essentially.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit. What's the outcome of that? What's happened since then?
Yeah, well, so it was, I think the man who celebrated the service, I know it's not a real mass, I think he has left Freemasonry in the last couple of years. I've heard conflicting accounts, but when he was made a bishop of the Church of England, he was at that time, I think in 2011, or it was either 2007 or 2011, he was still a Freemason. But maybe you'll agree with me here. One of the things, so I was actually asked to write a book for TAN that never followed through because there was just some downsizing on the sort of production for the year. So if anyone wants to steal this idea, maybe it's a winning idea. I only wrote about 30% of the book. It was 10 Dangers of the Illuminati, you know, talk about clickbait, but, you know, interesting thing. So I did a lot of research into these Illuminati formation and stuff and the person of Adam Weishaupt. And one thing that I found was fascinating when reading the impression of the earlier Freemasons, let's call it the sort of Anglo-Masonry versus the sort of continental European Freemasonry. And I did find there was a deep divide within the Masons about this subject of Illuminism. You know, I've read the Constitutions of Freemasons, you know, reprint United States. I think it was Franklin who did it or whoever it was. And it's obviously heretical, you know, like strictly from a historical perspective on the scriptures, it's wrong. But it is not a subversive, revolutionary, Gnostic craziness the way that the Illuminized version really became. And they had to sort of divide. That's my impression anyway. They had to divide on it. So I found that in the English tradition, there's another book by Nesta Webster, which some claims are disputed, but nonetheless, she wrote in the introduction to it that, you know, it was appreciated by the English Freemasons where she would make these distinctions between the sort of Illuminati side and the non. So I don't know what kind of Freemasonry that this bishop would have followed. Maybe he was more of that sort of classical vanilla English style, which is still wrong.
Yeah, probably, but since he was in England, he's more than likely Anglo. Yeah. But
yeah, more than likely, which again, it's still condemned. We're not saying it's good. We're just saying that there was historically a difference. So they celebrated this mass, this service. Some people have said it was not the actual altar of that the Pope would use. It might have been a table set up or something like that. I don't know. I don't know. I can't really know that. But since then, they did have another mass there by the Coptic Patriarch. I think it happened on the 14th of May. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it was in the same chapel, which is interesting because the Coptics are real priests. Obviously, they're OG Orthodox, like 400s schism. So it was a valid mass, which I guess is a step up. I don't know, but that, I don't know what's happened since, to be honest.
Yeah. Awesome. Let me get to a couple comments real quick. We're speaking with Mr. Kennedy Hall from the Kennedy Report. You can find him a lot of places online. He writes a lot of places. You just type in Kennedy Hall into your Google, your Bing, your artificial intelligence. Find him there. Easy to find. He's on the David L. Gray Show. We're talking about right now, wrapping up a conversation on some of his perspectives on Freemasonry. He talks about it, I don't know, maybe a couple times a month, maybe every other month. And we're going to transition here shortly into some criticisms that he may have heard and about the SSBX, but he's actually written a book defending it. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And also, we're at both going to be at the Coalition of Council Priests Conference in Chicago towards the end of June. So looking forward to that. We'll talk a little bit about that, see what he's speaking about there. This is the David L. Gray Show. Rachel Pop says, it wouldn't surprise me if secret Masons have infiltrated And it says the devil attacks the most Catholic places. That's true. But Brianna, she asked this Kennedy. She says, "What would the benefit of that be, though, if there was some sort of psyop or something like that from Freemasons?"
Well, again, I was just thinking about it from the perspective of the, you know, there was a guy named what's his name, Yuri Bezmenov, and he was prolific in speaking out against the communist methods in the 1990s. He actually died in Canada. He was a Soviet fella, and a lot of people have, I don't know if this is true. I'm just saying this is something that people have in the know have had strong opinions on. And they said he was actually sort of almost a double agent for the Soviets, and sort of posed as this guy who escaped the Soviet communists and really sort of spread misinformation sort of to throw people off the track. I don't know. So I just thought about it more of like, the long plan of the lodges and things like that. Would it be worth it to sow discord? Let's say, like, get so discord within perceptions of masonry within the church to maybe gain more acceptance. I don't know. It just seemed like, again, a fascinating strategy from a society, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And so Mary McCoach says, so like a Trojan horse.
Yeah, I guess like something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows?
That. I don't know where this came from, Colin. We're not even talking about this. But since you put it up there, and I know Kennedy is friendly with Dr. Taylor Marshall, Kennedy says, I don't think Taylor Marshall should be presenting himself for president. Have you got any thoughts? I know you cannot vote for him, Kennedy. I mean, but what's your thoughts? Is your friend serious or not?
He's serious. And I do have an article coming out tomorrow for Crisis. And my opinion is, and I did a video on this a few days ago. Is it likely that Taylor Marshall is going to get very far or win the presidency? Well, it's not likely that anybody's going to get very far or win the presidency. So the chances of winning are like the chances of becoming a pop star. It's just not going to happen to most people. Nonetheless, Catholics, we are historically encouraged to advocate for the rights of Christ the King. And we've got to do it locally. We've got to do it regionally, provincially, state, and nationally. So, he wants to put his hat in the ring and give it a shot, and I support him in it. And I'm sure some people might question his motives, and that's fine. People can question motives, but I know him to be a sincere person, and he's been really good to me, and we spent a lot of time together. So it'd be nice to see a politician running on a platform for Christ the King, because it's kind of a good platform. So we'll see what happens, I guess.
Yeah. So it is a real independent platform. I saw the Christ the King thing. I didn't know that was. It's always had good to have more voices. I mean, more voices never really hurt it. The cause of,
people I'll put running this, for president. Put it this way: at a certain point, we would have to. We hope and pray as Catholics that we would have Catholic leaders. I mean, this would be obviously good. So at some point, we got to start trying and. Maybe it's an utter failure, but maybe next year or next time there's more people willing to try. It's just someone's trying, and then, give it the old college try, and then we all just sort of support the rights of Christ in public and give it a shot. That's all.
Speaking of people who actually do run elections, the Bilderberg Society or, people like that, the big tech governance. Who compared to the run, I think amazing run that Freemasonry had from, say, 1717 all the way up to the communists come online. I mean, the things they accomplished, such as separation of church and state, public schools, marriages being something that the state determines. I mean, the impact that the Freemasons had by placing people in such influential positions is just the world just had never really been the same since their run. But if you look at the impact that, the Skittles have had over the past 20 years, I mean, they actually have, the Freemasons had never had a flag flown in any country, but the Skittles have their flag flown. I mean, here in Germany, their flag flies everywhere on state houses, everywhere the Skittles have their flag flying. you look at the Bilderbergs. I mean, before the European Union was even a thing, they were talking about it. And now the European Union over here is, they control finances. They control commerce, everything. You look at the big tech. After the 2020 election, we weren't allowed. I still can't talk about somebody doing strange things to their daughter. You couldn't talk about the people responding to the virus.
Yeah.
I just think that the Freemasons from 1717 to 1917 would have wet dreams about what some of these groups have been able to accomplish today. How do you compare the level of influence between these groups that have come, gone, some are still here?
Well, that's a good information. You know, it reminds me of in the scriptures, you know, one man sows, another man reaps. In order to get to the point where you could promote something against the natural law as being a good, right, which even pagans wouldn't really accept in the general sense, because at least many of them believe in the natural law. I think you have to separate God from society, so it's incremental. You know, this is one thing about the you hear about the long march to the institutions from the leftists. Well, they very much learned that from the Freemasonic methodology, where it's like, hey, if it takes us 150 years, let's do it, you know, and they did it. And so when you're at the point where basically this idea, like basically the idea of separating the church from the state, it doesn't make any sense because the church is part of the state, like, and the state includes people in it that go to the church. So there's this separation must be arbitrary. It can't actually be organic. It can't actually be functional. It's complete fiction. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about someone who I'm a very much like a Thomas Sowell limited government person in my political views. I wouldn't agree with all the things of like Catholic integralists, just on perspective of like how we should apply these doctrines of Christ the King in society and how the most effective way. But nonetheless, I must admit, and happily so, that any separation of church and state is technically speaking kind of impossible. So, but when you do have this impression of separating church and state, you're separating morality from the state. And really what you're doing is that means you're separating God from the state. And once you do that, well, now it's essentially this sort of this perception of democracy as sort of the vox populi is the vox dei. The voice of the people is the voice of God. Well, a people that reject the natural law or think it has no place in society and have adapted sort of these ideas of diversity and inclusion, all this kind of stuff. Well, I mean, it's pretty simple to see where that gets there and how it's happened. But I would say it wouldn't have been possible without the sort of long march through the institutions like the Freemasons did.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. Freemasons, they don't come online. They don't have their influence unless there's Protestantism that creates this, that brings online relativism, this idea, what's true for you is true for you. And without Freemasonry, without their run, communists don't come online. Without, because the Freemasons in their first wave, the separation of church and state, which is the idea that the state and the church, the state and the church were just too closely aligned. You had the papal states. You had the Pope crowning kings. You had it was just too close, and the church didn't have their own army. They relied on people like Napoleon, all these Charlemagne. They so if you take away the church's friend, now the church is open to be like gang raped in a prison, and that's really what they've tried to do. Once you take away the protection of the church is just out there by itself. I think that's had some benefit though, Kennedy. I don't know about you. I think the church losing its earthly kingship in a way of having to govern the whole papal state, the Pope having to no longer have to be a king and a spiritual leader. Over the last 100 or so years, him just being a spiritual leader, I think there was a moment, I can see the benefit in a lot of ways. Vatican II, I think, was, you know, definitely an I call it an abstract council. If you know what abstract art is, I call Vatican II an abstract council. It had no focus, and it produced nothing. It produced everything it produced had no focus, which has been harmful. But I don't know. Would you still like to live in a world where we do have the papal states?
Well, I mean, you know, I look at the papal states largely being in Italy. My mom's an Italian immigrant, and I lived in Italy as a kid. And one thing about Italy is that they never do anything well when it comes to the infrastructure and governance. I mean, like, Italy is a fascinating place because it's somehow produced arguably some of the greatest, I mean, not some of us, arguably the greatest culture as far as Christendom is concerned in so many ways. But it's also home to the most incompetent institutions that have ever existed. And it's just like you go to a bakery in Italy on Monday and it's like they're out of bread by like 10 in the morning. And it's like, oh, we'll have more tomorrow. And that's just how they are. They're just, it's an amazing place that way. They've had like 50 governments in the last year, in the last 50 years, you know. I think Giorgia Meloni might be one of the longest reigning ones, and it's only been for like 8 months, you know. Yeah. And that's just, you know. So, but Italy's always kind of had this internal fighting, you know. It really, Italy is a country that is like 15 or 20 different individual kingdoms in a sense. And I think that papal states was almost sort of historical necessity at a time. Whether or not I think it's effective for the Pope to be the literal head of state for many different realms and things like that, it's probably a very difficult prospect to do that well. So I mean, I think ideally I would hope that we'd have sort of these strong national characters with their leaders who are sort of anointed by the Pope, if that makes sense, yeah, or are supported by him. But since they got rid of the papal states, people have taken this idea of the Pope being a merely spiritual leader to meaning the Pope doesn't have any real jurisdiction. Right. And that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, good point there. Yeah, I like that final point. He's not just that, right? Yeah. Obviously. I know you know, my people who watch my show, they know I get triggered, like erasers touching a, you know, like chalk on a chalkboard, if that's still a thing. When people say Freemasonic, what do you mean by that word Freemasonic? As a former Freemason, you know, I pick up like a Masonic dictionary, like Mackey's or Coyle's, and that's just not a word that's in there. And I know that just from have been a former Freemason, I know Freemasons kind of like, hey, those are two different things. There's Freemasonry and there's Masonic orders, and putting them together is kind of like putting peanut butter and jelly together and saying it, calling it pajelli, right? It sounds Italian, but what do you mean? But I know this is. I know some Catholics use that term. What do you mean by Freemasonic? What is that?
I guess it would mean I've just heard the term 1,000 times from whatever, just speakers and stuff. And I just mean like sort of ideas or philosophical outlooks inspired by the philosophy of the Freemasons. That's basically what I
think. So it's like all encompassing.
Yeah.
Okay. Like a philosophy. Okay. That's kind of what I thought people meant. But I was wondering, like, are they talking about like the order of Freemasonry that people get initiated into? Or is there like the idea of ideology?
I don't think people do distinctions a lot. I think people, they don't really even know how Freemasonry works, which makes sense. I mean, why would you? I mean, there's lots of it secretive. So how could you? Also, it's just if you're not, I mean, why would you? Right. I mean, I don't know how the government of X country works because I don't know anything about it. So I think people just sort of use them interchangeably.
Yeah. Kennedy Hall on. He is an author. He is a podcaster, YouTuber, if you want to prefer that word. He does voiceovers for a number of books. He has a number of projects going on right now. Check him out online. Kennedy, what's your website?
TheKennedyReport.com.
It's a fine website. It has a dark color scheme and everything last time I was there. So you still have that? You had a dark color scheme there?
We do, and I have to do a shameless plug for my products. And my beard is unruly today, but I promise I do have a very nice beard balm for sale. Kennedy's Choice Beard Oil and Beard Balm. And we actually, we sell, this might sound strange, but we sell lanolin balm, which is like a hand cream thing, which has been like our best seller, weirdly enough. I have a friend who I do the business with. And he had this idea. He's like, do this, promise me, trust me. And I was like, okay, whatever. And it's good. And then we have frankincense oil. So people love their essential oils, which is great. I'm not full hippie when it comes to that stuff, but I do recognize there are some real good uses, and that's fine. I'm kind of like in the middle when it comes to homeopathic stuff. If there's a way to, you know, figure it out naturally, good for you. But if my kids kept me up all night and I got a bad cough, like I might take a Tylenol and you can, you know, take it or leave it. So We have frankincense oil, and you can buy it from Catholics rather than some sort of Mormon-run pyramid scheme. So that's what we have there, and people love that as well. So that's at thekennedyreport.com.
Look, guys, Kennedy Hall came on my show and did a commercial on my stream. I had never seen anything like that in my life. No one has ever came onto the David L. Gray show. Just like, just hijacked my show and did their own commercial. But that's Kennedy Hall. He's amazing. Let me bring him back on.
Yeah. Thank you. I, what did 50 Cent say? Get rich or die trying. I'm just trying to pay the bills or die trying.
Right, that's cool. I have to tell you, Kennedy, that's the only time on your show where I watch you do the plugs. When you're doing that thing with the gold, I just skip past it. But yeah, the beer thing, man, the beer thing, I watch it every time.
There you go.
You're doing a good job with that. I don't know if you want to get to this before we get to the SSPX, but I got one comment here from Brooklyn. She said, thoughts on Michael Lofton's attacks on Bishop Strickland. Brianna said, I never use that term because you taught me better, David. Is it a verb, a noun? I can see your wheels turn. Yeah, I think it is. I think Freemasonic is like calling somebody a communist. I think it's like, yeah. I think it seems to be an ideology. Yes. So I think, I don't know if I still like it. I think it's still Pajelli for me, but I think I understand it better.
Okay, good.
So do you want to, did you want to talk about that or no?
I don't know what happened there. I don't watch this show.
Okay. Okay, cool.
So I don't know.
Colin says, I don't shave that much. Rachel Pop says, great talk, guys. Bless chat. This conversation, says Epi Rose, ranks right up there with your interview with Billy Porter.
Who's that?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you're so Billy Porter is probably the gayest black man you've ever seen in your in entire life. I don't know how many gay black men you've seen, but Billy is the gayest of the gay. He has HIV. I mean, he's so gay. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. But yeah, he's mad at you now. So yeah, he's like, whoa. So yeah, it was a funny show. Billy kind of cussed me out. But Kennedy Hall and the David L. Gray show. The SPSPX, Society of St. Pius X, my liturgical experience, I've always had a preference for the Eastern rites. I'm in Germany now, so I go to Mass on base. I'm a pastoral associate or pastoral coordinator there. So that's pretty much, I don't go to German churches because I don't speak enough German to know whether it's a mass nightmare or not. But when I was back at home, especially when I lived in St. Louis, you know, I would go to Monsignor Eugene Morris's church quite often. I would go to Institute of Christ the King there at the Oratory, St. Francis de Sales, rather. So love it. But Eastern had always had my heart, right? So I've been to FSSP. That's my first Latin mass experience. So I have no context of Society St. Pius X. In my book, yeah. Traditional Catholic and Black, I did have a story in there from a friend of mine who has always been all her life, and her parents' life had been belonged to, well, not her parents' life, but her mother first, and then she had come into that, the Society St. Pius X. So I don't have, so it doesn't, I can go weeks without even thinking about this issue, but is it frustrating for you that it's always the legitimacy of something that you love is like called into question? Is that frustrating or no?
Oh yeah. I mean, listen, like when you love something and I use the word love in the truest Christian sense here, like, you know, God save my bishop of my diocese. It's a very, very bad diocese. It's a very bad diocese. Our seminary is infamous, you know, for many reasons that, you know, would make their way into Taylor Marshall's sequel to Infiltration type infamous, you know, like it's just not a good place. It's very sad, you know. Wow.
Yeah, strange things, especially with schools and stuff up there. I mean, oh my God.
Yep, I was in the school system. I saw the sausage being made. You know, I really, like, I was a teacher. I was doing church diocese stuff. I was doing all the things. And I just, I have 5 children. Actually, I haven't announced this on the internet yet, so this is the first place. But we are expecting.
Let me give you the screen again. Hold on. All right.
We are expecting our 6th child. So please, everyone, please pray for my wife. She's been through a lot with her head injury, and she's doing a lot better, and she is with child, which is such a blessing. So please pray for a safe and healthy baby, and for my wife.
Thank you.
Congratulations,
and, by the way.
Thank you. And my oldest is 7 years old, so there's not a lot of space there in the children. And anyway, so I was going to raise, I'm like, okay, we've got to raise these kids. I had this big conversion. Thank you to Our Lady of Guadalupe. And I'm like, we got to raise these kids right. I'm seeing how the sausage is being made. You know, even when I started working in the system, I'm like, well, we're homeschooling our kids now, you know, things like that. And so I found refuge at the SSPX. If you want tradition and you're within a 2-hour radius of the chapel that we went to, that was about it. You know, there were some good TLM communities that definitely offered the mass, and they were wonderful, and we've attended them before, and there's no ill will or anything like that. It just, you know, 3 p.m. on a Sunday, sometimes you don't have it. You can't get the sacraments, the catechesis. It's not what you need, if that makes sense. So I do love the SSPX from a perspective of the friendships and the leadership and the pastoral guidance that we have had personally that we couldn't find. But at the same time, I do understand, and I'm getting less and less touchy about it, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Because the more you dive into tradition and you really come to try to understand why are we here in the church, what's going on, and there really is this deep division between basically the traditional understanding of the faith and the sort of new springtime understanding of the faith. And the SSPX, uniquely because of their history, represents not only an attachment to the old mass, but a stance of resistance against the new springtime. So it makes perfect sense to me that people would have the SSPX would be a target for them, because it's kind of like if you can topple the SSPX, then it's almost like symbolically toppling the sort of traditional framework, if that makes sense. I think that just from a perspective, I think that makes sense.
That makes sense. I never thought about that. It is a beacon of tradition. I think that was Bishop Strickland sort of said that in a sense in his tweet, said they're holding up tradition. So that's a good perspective. When you consider some of the criticisms of it, though, dealing with its relationship with Rome. What's in your book that you recently wrote? Is titled what again, Kennedy?
SSPX: The Defense. Another shameless plug. It's right here for everybody to see.
SSPX: The Defense by Kennedy Hall.
Yeah.
And in that book, do you deal with what is a good term for us people who are, you know, we probably never go to SSPX, but we may enter into conversations about it.
Sure.
And when we hear things, you know, such as, you know, what seems to be a weird history with the relationship with Rome. So what's a good, I mean, what do we say? Do we call it, from Rome's perspective, do we call it irregular? Do we call it regular, separate, separated?
That's the thing. There is no one answer from Rome, which is one of the reasons why it's so confusing. The best approximation to the way that, and actually I don't, there's no straw man's in this book. It's steel man. So I do include in here, for example, he's an esteemed canon law faculty dean from the University of St. Paul in Ottawa, which is one of the 2 universities of pontifical right that grant degrees in canon law for actual practicing canon lawyers. So he's a very well respected man. And he wrote, not a critique, but more of sort of a legal opinion, let's say, about the SSPX in 2014, which was before they had been recognized as having faculties for confession, which would entail a canonical status on its own right, and we'll get to that maybe in a second. But he did write there that they do enjoy an irregular canonical status because there was some aspect of being juridic persons in the church, basically meaning some way these are priests in the Catholic Church, who are not under individual penalties themselves, unless the individual has done something, but as a group, So they have some sort of canonical status, but we don't really know what it is. And that was the opinion of a very strong, a steel man argument against them. Now, things have changed a lot. And again, in this book, I do start from like 1970. Like we're going, it's 250 pages, no stone left unturned. And it's documents and citations, like it's the whole thing. And we go through the whole history, the reasons why Lefebvre did what he did and so on and so forth. And I include the critical statements of the popes and the various, you know, theologians and things like that sort of to bounce off of them. Yeah. And so we can argue for a time before 2015 or 2009, rather. And I do that. But since then, really what we have is the SSPX is an order of priests who I describe as being like free agents. They're allowed to play sometimes, but no one really says who their GM is, if that makes sense. Like they're like, it's almost like they're on like the waivers list, you know, like you can select them if you want, but like they don't have a team. And that's where they are. So for example, since 2017, Pope Francis gave them universal permission to ordain priests without asking permission of the local bishop, which is unheard of. It's weird. I mean, but Pope Francis does things like that. But nonetheless, it's like, so we can't even claim that their ordinations would cause a suspension, which in the past people would claim. So really, it is just sort of canonical limbo.
Which is why it seems that, I guess, on the diocesan level, there's really been, if there's confusion from Rome, from the Congregation of Doctrine of Faith, from the Holy See, I guess that sort of trickles down to the diocese. So, yes. I mean, in 1991, you had a Bishop Joseph Ferraro out of Honolulu.
Yes.
He issued some restrictions in 96, Fabian in Lincoln, Nebraska. In 2014, Bishop Marcello out of Albany, Italy, issued a warning that Catholics would encourage communication, you know, for attending SSPX masses. So, so that's what you get, huh, when there's... when a relationship is kind of like in a sort of limbo sort of thing, right?
Well, and it's interesting you bring up the one from 1991. And by the way, my bishop puts out a letter every 6 months or so, and it's the same letter, and he copy and pastes it. I know this because it's the same letter. With any address, he sends it to different parishes on behalf, the chancery office does on behalf of the bishop. When they find out that some people start going to the SSPX because they families will say, my family's leaving the church, and the bishop puts a letter. It's the same one. It says you can't even – this letter is so crazy. It says you can't attend the SSPX for sacraments under any circumstances. Yeah. I'm like, actually, technically canon law says you could attend the Eastern Orthodox. So that's an untenable position canonically. Nonetheless, 1991, the Bishop of Honolulu, Bishop Ferrario, he basically excommunicated from his diocese or – declared as such that six families, the parents of the families had excommunicated themselves. And then Cardinal Ratzinger overturned it in 1993 because he said there was no penalty to be found in them. So even there, you have a bishop in 91 trying to follow the letter of the law of what Pope John Paul II said in 1988. But then when they do that, the CDF overturns someone trying to follow with the strict adherence to the opinion of the Pope. And it's just been confusion ever since.
Yeah, that's quite amazing. And then recently, well, not recently, I think it was 2015, Pope Francis also issued that it's supposed to be, I thought the jubilees, usually, historically, popes would issue these just for a time frame of a year, these jubilee years, where there's these particular indulgences or things that that whatever is going on, Pope thinks for us. For the Pope says for our spiritual good, that whatever. So I remember one in my book, the Catechism for Mace, where I talked about it had to be in the 1740s. There's a jubilee year in which the Pope following Clement XII had issued his jubilee year of mercy just for Freemasons to come and confess their sins because the penalty against Freemasonry was much stricter back then. And so it was just for a year, but this one that Francis issued in 15, which gave Society of St. Pius the 10 faculties for marriage and for confession. That seems to have been a song that never ends. It just never ended.
That's funny. yes. And I, you know, Again, you know, we look back to as early as 1991, and I do cite this in my book. It's in there somewhere. Anyway, again, it's right here. But when the bishops were trying to implement what they thought was the letter of the law regarding the SSPX, even we're talking 2 years after the consecrations in 1988, you know, the sort of highest authorities in Rome kind of overturned that. And that's since then, it's really been massive confusion. So I think one of the things that Pope Francis did, which I'm very happy, I'm grateful to him for, I think it was clearing up confusion, because even regarding confessions and things, you know, canon law is very clear. And so is just our basic Catholic sense. If a member of the faithful needs a sacrament for the good of their soul, and it's under the purview of a priest to offer it, canon law even says now that even a suspended priest can offer a confession for it. It says for any just cause, or even an act of governance. And what an act of governance is marriage or confession. It doesn't mean act of governance in the sense of like a juridical penalty. That's a different thing. Yeah. That's like, you know, excommunications and suspensions and stuff. But when it comes, but confession and marriage are technically acts of governance, because you present yourself to the church as the accused, right? You accuse yourself in confession technically. And in other languages, you'll say things like je m'accuse, right? In French, like I accuse myself. And in marriage is a witness of the church to the validity of your sacrament in a public sense. So these are two things that are acts of governance. And I think Pope Francis basically settled the controversy so that there could be clarity. And I think that's one of the reasons he hasn't rescinded it, because I think he knows he's a very hard man to read, but I think he knows that it would not help anything as far as clarity is concerned if he were to sort of take them back, because they were there was confusion beforehand, and there'd be probably even more after.
Yeah. And Brianna asked a question, like, what about the other sacraments? So I mean, the Jubilee year concerned marriage and confession, but once we get to the Mass itself, the Holy Eucharist, confirmation, anointing of the sick, does the sacrament, is still the work of the sacrament is being worked because of the sacrament? I mean, does it have anything to do with the priest in regards to the SSPX? I mean, we'll talk about that.
Sure, that's a really good question. So anointing of the sick, by definition, is a danger of death sacrament. So there is always permission for, you know, the classic example is if Ted McCarrick is walking by someone on the side of the road who's dying, can he give him last rites? Yes, he can. He's a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. You know, sadly, he's a bad one, but he's a priest. There's never a question for extreme unction, last rites, anointing sick, whatever you want to call it. It's never a problem. Mass is not something where you have to have jurisdiction for it. It's not a jurisdictional sacrament. You do have to have, normally speaking, permissions to set up a parish, of course, in a diocese, and a bishop could take up issue if you didn't. But Catholics are under no obligation to, for example, not attend a private mass. You know, if David's brother is a priest and he's visiting at the family cottage in the summer, and there's Catholics that are neighbors, and they say, hey, my brother is celebrating mass tomorrow, do you want to come here instead of having to drive into town for the parish? You can do that. There's no problem. So faculties are most necessary in the sense of jurisdiction for confession and marriage. The other sacraments aren't really touched by it. As far as confirmations, similar thing. Confirmation is an extremely simple ceremony. And in fact, the Novus Ordo confirmation is really just the Eastern Rite confirmation. It's pretty much the same words, just in English. And the old Rite confirmation is just different, but it takes like 2 seconds. It's not really that complicated. And what's necessary for confirmation is that a bishop does it, or that a priest or a monsignor with permission does it. And that's all that's necessary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. So you think there's ever going to be any resolution to this issue? I mean, is the church and Society of St. Pius X getting further away from each other? Or are they coming closer? What do you see as the future moving forward?
That's a good question. I would rephrase the question slightly. I know you weren't doing this. I wouldn't say the church and the SSPX as if they're separated.
Right. I would say the Holy See. You know,
sure. Like, I mean, let's say the administrative side of things.
Yeah.
I think they're much closer. So there's been lots of negotiations between, or I shouldn't call them negotiations, doctrinal discussions between the society and the church over the years. And they kind of always get to a sticking point. And this actually happened between Archbishop Lefebvre and John Paul II. Archbishop Lefebvre had his only meeting with JP II in 1978. And he said to John Paul II, and this is on record, there's a bishop out of Switzerland who's been living with the SSPX for the last few years, and he's recently come out. He was appointed to do so by Rome. He retired there officially with Rome's permission to live with the SSPX, which is very strange things if they were schismatics. He talks about this in one of his recent videos that he's produced. And Lefebvre asked John Paul II, can you please give us something to sign that says we just sort of full stop interpret the council in light of tradition? And they just wouldn't provide anything. Because, as you said, that was a perfect term, by the way, the abstract council. I've never thought of that without focus. You know, Benedict said this. He said, was it Gaudium et Spes acts as a counter-syllabus towards a syllabus of errors when it comes to, like, religious freedom and things like that? And I think when there's these discussions between the SSPX and Rome, what you're really seeing is a discussion between sort of the post-conciliar spirit and what the church has always taught and believed. And for the longest time, the church has been committed to this sort of hermeneutic continuity, which is a very difficult philosophical position to work through. And so as far as a reconciliation, when there is a reconciliation or clarity of the administrative or hierarchical side of the church as such with the church's historical identity, I think then the administrative reconciliation is very simple. Because at present, you know, we think about potential solutions for the SSPX. What would they be? Some people have said personal prelature. That's possible, although Pope Francis mm-hmm. did take away the Opus Dei's prelate, so it's not even really a prelature anymore. So that's not a long-term solution necessarily. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, maybe an ordinariate, which is historical, and the Anglicans have one, the Anglican ordinariate, and of course the military ordinariates do. But even there is still some sort of acceptance by the bishops' conference, which, depending on your country, can kind of change with leadership. But even if Pope Francis tomorrow were to say, my magic wand, you know, SSPX is all good, bishops, they're yours now, figure it out. It's like, well, then you still have the politics, and then you still have the same problems theologically that could be at loggerheads. Yeah. So as far as when it would happen, I mean, it's more of a question of when will we see a restoration of understanding of dogma at all levels of the church, and I think then you could see it.
Rachel Pop asks, are all SSPX priests valid? Were some not allowed to be ordained?
They're all valid. Even every Orthodox priest is valid. So even if the SSPX had created a parallel church, which they didn't, but even if they did, validity has never been the question. Validity is a very low bar, thankfully, because it means our priests are valid. But yeah, that's not a problem.
Okay. And Brian asks, is the SSPX one entity with Rome or separate, like an off branch, like Greek Orthodox?
It's not like the Greek Orthodox, because never at any time has the SSPX pretended to have its own diocese or bishops that have jurisdiction. The bishops of the SSPX were ordained explicitly as auxiliaries, which means the traditional sense of having the power of orders, but not of governance in the public sense, which does, as a side note, I apologize for so many tangents, but it does strike at the confusion since the council as well, because the notion of episcopal jurisdiction, the understanding of that radically changed after the council. And that has been a problem within understanding the jurisdiction of bishops since then as well. But they don't have a separate church. And in fact, I'll give you an example. It's in the book. But in 2015, Bishop Fillet, he was appointed as the judge by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith for a priest of the SSPX who had committed some sort of canonical crime. I don't know what it was. It's terrible that any priest of any order could commit a crime, let alone just a society priest. And Bishop Fillet was appointed as the judge by Rome for an act of official juridical governance of a priest of the Catholic Church as a bishop. It'd be pretty hard to say they're separated. I think if the Pope was to appoint somebody to the Russian Orthodox, they'd probably just laugh at him rather than accept it. So, yes, they're definitely not separate, and they're definitely not like the Orthodox schism.
Yeah, thanks for that. We're speaking with Kennedy Hall from the Kennedy Report. His book on this subject is SSPX, A Defense. You can find it. You just type it into, you know, your search browser, but, you know, it's at the usual sites. I see. Also, you can go to kennedyhall.ca and I think the kennedyreport.com, correct?
Yep, yep.
Yes, sir. You can get it there. And he's on the David L. Graves Show, wrapping up our conversation. Hey, Kennedy, you're going to be over at the Coalition for Council of Priests. You're going to be speaking there at their conference. And what got you interested in their work in the first place?
Well, at LifeSite, there has been a relationship there, so I heard about them that way. And then Father Lovell did reach out to me. And I did meet the... I did meet Father Lovell and Father Scott down in Florida last year at the LifeSite annual conference, annual convention. And, you know, I think in some ways Archbishop Lefebvre was the canceled bishop, if that makes sense, you know. Mm. And so I sympathize with the plight of these priests who many of them really, some of them aren't even traditionalists. You know, like some of them, it's like my bishop didn't like me praying outside an abortion clinic, and he's like basically a charismatic. You know, he's not even like a trad, but he just was too, he's just too pro-life, you know. So I sympathize with these men who have given their lives to serve Christ and have been sadly maligned for their orthodoxy. So I sort of feel some kinship there with them, because I think that there's something like that with what's happened to traditional priests over the decades. So I support the movement, if that makes sense.
What are you going to be talking about at the conference? Do you know yet?
The canceled bishop, Archbishop Lefebvre.
Ah, okay. Yeah. That's going to be a very, very, very interesting talk. Yeah, look forward to hearing that. So, man, it's been so good having you on the show, man. It really has been.
Yeah, you got to come on my show sometime and drop some truth bombs about Freemasonry.
I have a lot of truth bombs. Some of them smell too. So
sulfur bombs.
Cool. All right, man. So we already know how to pray for you. We usually ask our guests, "Hey, how can I pray for you?" But I know that you're having a new baby. Your wife is still not 100%, but she's getting there. How else can we pray for you?
That's enough. And if you like to our favorite saints to intercede to are Saint Anne, is Saint Anne. She's our home girl. We have actually a piece of her bone in a relic in our house. We're very, very lucky. My friend Al Smith, the gas man, if you know him, you know why he's called that. He's a Fulton Sheen advocate.
Yeah. He was on my show like a long time ago. He's like a Fulton Sheen, man.
He's the man. He's a wonderful friend. He's a wonderful man. And he is, when you meet him, he's the kind of guy that for some reason everybody just trusts and wants to give stuff to. So when these parishioners are like liquidating and clearing out, they're like, "We don't know what to do with all our relics." And he's like, "Oh, I'll take them. I'll take them." So he has like a reliquary in his house from all these old Novus Ordo parishes that were like downsizing. Wow. And one of them was a piece of bone of Saint Anne. So we have that, and we love Saint Anne. So intercede with Saint Anne if you could.
Amen. Saint Anne, pray for us. Awesome. Yeah, we do that. Kennedy Hall, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you, my friend. It's been wonderful.